Thank you for coming to the Senior Spotlight. I'm Mary Cordova with Concierge Care Advisors. This is episode number 18, and I have the privilege of speaking to Ashley Inks today, one of my senior advisors, and so excited that she is joining us. She has brought so much to Concierge Care Advisors in such a short period. Ashley, welcome to Senior Spotlight.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Talk about what I do every day. Yeah, exactly, and the passion that you have. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about your background and where you came in senior care. And I know you went to college and was a caregiver and all that, but share with everybody what you do and your passion.
Yeah, I started out working as a CNA, so a caregiver, actually providing hands-on care. And I did that in college, aiding in my efforts to continuing on to nursing school. And so started working as a caregiver, and it was kind of amazing going into this, you know, early 20s, going into these homes, taking care of folks that are in their 80s and 90s, and then leaving after, you know, a 12-hour shift and having their kids in their 50s and 60s come up to me, you know, facing these really difficult situations at home. Sure. And saying, what do I do? And I'm 20. And I like, I don't know, you know, I feel for you so much, right. And I can take care of them, but I'm not sure.
Right.
And it was just then when I started to realize that there was a real need for people that had the knowledge and were willing to help folks navigate these situations. And so from that point on, it was always senior care. And prior to this role, I was the director of operations for a home care company. And so moving to CCA was a really intentional move. I had gathered a lot of information about senior care and just caring for them in general. And so now being in this role, I really love that I can kind of open it up the entire spectrum. It's, you know, whatever you need is what I'm here to do.
I love that. And I love that you said at the very beginning, you knew how to care for them, but you didn't know how to navigate all of the things that they may need down the road for a good journey.
Yeah.
You know, which of course now you do.
Yeah. But still learn every day.
Yep. So do I. That's healthcare, right?
Yeah.
But families are facing overwhelming decisions, uncertain about the guidance that they need, looking really for a smoother transition. And as Mark always says, empowering them to make a good decision the first time. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you and the passion that you bring to that to make sure that they're making good decisions at the very beginning.
I mean, I think you remind us too, we need to listen first. When we meet folks, they're in all different situations. They could be at home just starting to plan, which is great.
Yeah.
But they could also be in the ER. Mm-hmm. And we know with dementia and brain change that sometimes you get to the ER and there's maybe not a great reason to be admitted.
Yeah.
So then you're sitting there, going home isn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Family knows that, doctors know that, but you need a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so going in and talking to folks, and I always ask, you know, what happened? How did we get here?
Right.
What does care look like right now? But also, what could it look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what are our goals?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here as your advocate. I use that word a lot.
Yes.
You know, I'm the sister in the bunch, or the daughter, or whoever I need to be is who I'll be for that. And just, you know, we just get started. So.
Well, that brings me to one case that we will probably talk about later, because you were the daughter, the granddaughter, the niece, and everything to that couple. You mentioned being an advocate and talking about their goals. I love that. I love that you bring them into the process of what are your short, long-term goals? And looking at that, pulling back the curtain on what it means to be a senior care advisor and really walking that journey with them. And being that lifeline, because you not perhaps have gone through this with family members, but this is your life. This is what you do every day. You probably help 6 to 8 people every day navigate senior care.
Yeah.
And
I never discount how difficult this process is.
Right.
I tell people that all the time. I want to acknowledge that up front.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pretend that anything is easy. I don't come through a door and say, listen, this is what you have to do. You know, mm-hmm. I want to hear what they want and what's important to them. And then I have to bring in some reality.
Right.
Sometimes.
Kind of work backwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, but, you know, it's how can we make that meet with really what's going to be best for you at this point and maybe 5 years from now, too.
Right.
How can we make everything meet in the middle and set you up for success? So.
And that's so important, because what people may want and what they need sometimes are two different things, right?
They can be very different. I always say you know, people will say, my mom really doesn't want to do this, you know, and I say, oh, I understand. And they say, no, you haven't met my mom. And I say, I've met your mom
a million times.
Yeah. And very rarely do people say, I've planned for this and I'm excited
exactly.
for this. Exactly. It's just not the reality. No, you know, no. If you've lived in a house for 50 years and you're 90 years old, you know, how dare someone come in and tell you that maybe that's not the safest spot for you anymore.
Right, right.
No. So we have to, you know, people want to know that you know that.
Exactly, exactly. And sometimes just not coming in and being the expert to say, hey, you need to move. You know, because it's not always about the move. It's about who are your resources around you? Are you getting social activity? Are you getting stimulation? How are you getting your meals? Are your medications being taken properly? All of those kind of holistic approaches. Yeah. And we're not here just to move people. As we know, we help with in-home care and all of that. But, you know, as we know, we talked in our last segment with our advisory board, just the cost. Linda Marzano is on our advisory board. She mentioned having her mom at home and, you know, making a promise, mom, I'll never move you. And as we know today in 2025, when it costs 35 to 40 grand a month to keep somebody home safely, we know that those aren't promises that we should probably make in 2025.
No, home care can be great for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's always something on the table. You know, I'll talk about all of the options with folks. And some of them might not be great for them, but I want to feel like they have enough, you know, information to make a really good decision for themselves.
Right.
And so home care, you know, it can be a great bridge.
Yep.
While we figure out a different solution.
Exactly.
It could be a great kind of starter to care mm-hmm. for someone who is, you know, having a hard time getting around. But, you know, when you have someone who's a fall risk and they're saying, OK, let's start out with a couple of 4-hour shifts a week.
Right.
That leaves, you know, 160 hours a week where falls can still occur.
Absolutely.
You know, or families are coming over and every time you come over, you have a to-do list with
right.
mom and dad.
Right. That quality time is so important to have those reversal roles where you're no longer the caregiver and you can be that daughter or that son again. You don't know how much time you have with your loved one. So be able to have that quality time is so important. Can you talk a little bit about how you recommend things and how the directors of family services help behind the scenes and how you're hands-on with your patients and their family members when they're in crisis?
Yeah. I mean, how I'm, you know, suggesting things or recommending them is really I'm listening to what's going on. I'm looking at care. I'm looking at our diagnoses. You know, what do we have a progressive, do we have dementia, Parkinson's, MS?
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
But I can make an educated guess on some aspects of care and how they're going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're talking about that. And then, you know, the finances is a really big piece of it. It's not a secret to anyone that senior care is expensive.
Right.
And so how can we make your money last and plan for the future? You know, there's some people that, you know, they didn't plan, but they are well resourced.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also folks that have a limited amount to make mm-hmm. things work. And so, you know, we need to look at the reality of the situation and the care needs and the cost and kind of put those together.
Right.
And from that, you know, I will lay out kind of two different paths,
mm-hmm.
but I will explain the pros and cons of both
on
of
both
those.
Of them, right.
You know, and I'm not going to shut down anyone. Sometimes they need to see something too.
Exactly.
To kind of have a good baseline because, mm-hmm. you know, usually when we're doing this, you know, even if you're, you know, your son, daughter, whoever it is that I'm working with, they could be 60, but this is their first time handling this specific thing.
Absolutely.
So I want people to just feel like they got what they needed to make a decision that they're comfortable with. And then, you know, I follow them through the process.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just transactional. We're done.
Right.
We make sure that it's the right fit and that it's successful. And I love seeing them, you know, kind of thriving in their environment that they're in. So,
wonderful. Yeah. So you don't give them just a list. You take them out to three places and meet them and tell us a little bit about that. And also the directors of family services that searches for you.
No, it's a hands-on. So I always tell people when I first talk with them, would you like to meet in person? you know, I can do everything over the phone if you'd like, but, you know, outside of touring.
Right.
But I will come meet you in person, however is most comfortable for you. Putting eyes on someone really does help me.
Especially in their own environment. Yeah. I think that really shows you a lot as well.
I can pick up a lot from just watching someone move around a room. And so, you know, we're touring with them in person, and we, a really big piece of CCA is that we have so much support behind the scenes. And, you know, if I was just doing this on my own, you know, get it done, but it would be, there'd be a lot happening. And so the director of family services, they just, you know, the fact that they're there to support us, and not only just with our searches and finding the right solutions for folks at the right cost point, but also just keeping up on those DSHS reports and making sure everything's being done above board. I mean, it's just a lifesaver, especially when you need to move quick. You know, people will be worried. There's, you know, I can see kind of the heaviness on their shoulders or the concern behind their eyes sometimes when they know we need a fast solution. And I tell them, I'm not worried.
Right.
We will make
it happen. We'll still be thorough.
You know, and it's because we have such a great team to help aid in that process.
So. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, as we know, but we'll share with everyone out there listening, the directors of family services do all the searches for all the advisors. It's led by a social worker. Claudine has been with us actually 14 years today. Yay. Oh, my gosh. So blessed and lucky to have her. And three other people that work in that department. And so I'm so lucky to have them. And as you said, the on the Department of Social Health Services, making sure there's no enforcement letters, keeping us all compliant. And even if it's just in-home care or home health or transportation or a mover, a packer, a realtor, they can help with all those resources as well. So we are so lucky to have that extension of the department. So excited.
Yeah. Couldn't do it without them.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your day looks like? You might get up and think, I'm going to go call on some skilled nursing centers and hospitals and just share some coffees today. And then you end up with somebody in the emergency room. So your whole day changes. Tell us a little bit about a day in an advisor.
That was last Friday. I said, I think it's been a really busy week. I think, you know, I'll ease in. I start making plans and, you know, I should know better.
You should know better on a Friday, right?
So,
Your poor fiancé.
It's very understanding. No, it just, it really depends. Sometimes I do have tours and I have things that I'm meeting and I have families that I'm helping with the transition and, you know, navigating the questions. I always say I'm here to kind of ask all the questions that you maybe don't even think to ask.
Absolutely.
And so some days we're doing that. Some days I'm doing intakes or I'm meeting people out at the hospital or I'm getting a call that, you know, it's someone I've been working with and, you know, things took a turn and we're in the ER and we need something now. And so then we're going out there. So it just, it really depends on the day. But I think that that's kind of the beauty in it too, is that, you know, I can be available.
And you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. I got a call from an advisor today and she made a transportation commitment for a patient that just needed transportation from the clinic to the hotel. And the transportation company couldn't come through. And so Linda called me today and said, is it okay if I transport? Because he really needs somebody to show up. And I'm like, absolutely. That's what we do. So I remember literally packing up somebody, moving their belongings. And I have talked to you about so many cases. I know I also had a case that somebody moved here from, actually, they came to visit, I want to say from New York. They took a fall and it ended up being that the family decided he just needed to stay here. But then the family member needed to fly back to check on mom while we went out to garage sale shopping to find couches and tables and a bed and just to get them by, you know. So we do so much to help with good outcomes. I'd love to hear a story or two about your good outcomes on something that you have done with a family member. The one that I remember is the daughter back east and the mom that was in the memory care and the dad that just couldn't live without her but didn't realize that she needed so much care and he got in a car accident and all of that.
No, it's a There's two. There's, you know, you can ask families what their, you know, what is your barrier to this happening right now?
Yeah.
And if it's something like, you know, getting this or picking up that or get, I'm like, take it off your tape. I'll do it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it feels big because they're in this really hard spot where everything feels heavy.
Yeah.
So but
everything's
that's
an
not,
obstacle.
Yeah. This is what we do
that's
every
awesome.
Day. And so, but yeah, just navigating. I mean, it's very difficult when you have a couple where both are experiencing brain change.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, because you can't reason.
No.
With
no.
With someone.
Yeah.
You know, and
they don't know that they need help.
No. And
yeah.
I always, you know, the kids, it's hard. It is hard to get into a situation where you now feel like you need to tell your parents what they need to do.
Yeah, that's so hard.
Yeah. And I've also seen it where if you don't,
the outcomes are not good.
No, those are the worst ones.
Yeah, you have to stand up. And when what I tell people is when your parents are no longer making good decisions, you have to make decisions for them, not always with them.
Right.
When and empower them to do so.
Yeah, when they're jumping in their car.
Driving. Yeah.
And leaving their, you know, someone talked about their dad leaving his car just out in the middle of the road, door open, couldn't remember where he was, and just walked away.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and
that's
it's just
so scary.
But it's then I feel so bad about taking the keys away.
Right. I understand that. But also, what if they were to, God forbid, hit somebody, kill somebody?
Themselves.
I mean, you're gonna themselves?
Yeah.
You're gonna live with that?
Yeah, it's
don't forget about the keys.
No,
you know.
No, I've had people too say the car was stolen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you have to do what
you
people
have to
feel
do
guilty.
To keep people safe. That's okay, as long as they're safe.
Yeah.
Mom's battery, you know?
If we're keeping people safe, then we're doing the
it's
right
okay.
thing. And,
you
know, we would really kick ourselves if we didn't just kind of do what we knew needed to be done in the situation, even if, you know, we felt bad.
Exactly. It's okay to feel a little bad if somebody's safe and going to be alive tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, but yeah, I will step in wherever I need to. That's what helps me sleep at night, you know, if people reach out. Because like I said earlier, this is not a transaction.
Right.
It's not, you know, I need this, here you go, okay, have a great life.
Right. You're following them until the end of life.
Yeah, sometimes it's a text in the middle of the night and it says this happened and I really need help. Or, you know, sometimes it's just a call to say, you know, I had a husband and wife and, you know, the husband did everything to the house because he was staying in that house.
Mm-hmm.
But it got to the point where it just was not safe for him.
Right.
And so wife made the decision and we found him a really great place to transition into. And, you know, it took some calls afterwards where she was saying, you know, I just feel so guilty. I feel relief and guilt.
Yes. Yes.
Both at the same time.
Yeah.
And so it was talking to me and it was just, you know, through the situation. And it's just, it's hard. But, you know, as time goes on, we do understand why we make decisions that we do.
Exactly. And it's so hard for spouses. As we share with people is, you can care for people as long as they're safe, but once they no longer are safe, you got to make some decisions.
Yeah.
And it's okay to, you know, feel that way. And you're going to have a lot of emotions and a lot of it's going to be guilt, but it's okay. You're doing the right thing and you took them as far as you could until they're no longer safe.
Yeah. And I tell them a lot of times, put yourself in their shoes.
Right.
If you were in their situation and them in yours,
mm-hmm.
what would you want them to do for you?
Yeah.
And for themselves.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's flipping the script can do a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially with loved ones or spouses, if people are starting to get irritable with each other, those are tall tell signs you might want to start making some changes.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be irritable with your spouse that might need to get his socks put on and use the bathroom and he needs you to help with hygiene or those kind of things.
Yeah.
But if I become irritable, I'm not doing anyone any good.
Yeah, we don't want resentment.
Right.
And we also don't want the well spouse to take a tumble because they're trying to. How often do we see the well spouse start to decline faster than the person they were taking
Absolutely.
Care of?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So.
And those respite for the well spouses, if you're at home listening, that's you. If you're a caregiver, we are also concerned about your well-being as well. When you may be calling for your loved one, we may be more worried about your getting some days off and some respite so you can stay fresh and not be irritable with your spouse. But if it's getting to that point, you may be getting to the point where you need to talk to a senior advisor and just talk about all your options and be real transparent about what that looks like, and also the feelings that you're feeling if you are turning that love into resentment because you're feeling like you're doing everything. And it's okay to feel that way.
It's okay to feel that way. Mm-hmm. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay. You know, you don't get into senior care because you don't care about people. So exactly. When people will apologize for telling me how they're feeling, you know, they're like, I didn't call you for this. And I say, it's okay.
We're a therapist. Yeah. We're a social worker. We're whatever you want us to be.
Yeah, this is
your daughter.
This is going to be a connection.
Exactly.
You can text me, call me whenever.
Yes, whenever you need me. Yeah. Tell me some of the barriers when people are looking on their own. They don't know the level of care at the community. As you mentioned at the beginning, you're setting people up for success and asking them what are their goals. But you may know that you need to look at assisted living with a memory care because they have Parkinson's and, you know, you want to prepare for the short and long-term goals. So what are some of the obstacles and barriers that people might run into that don't even know that they're barriers?
The big ones. It's care level. It's understanding care mm-hmm. level and understanding the disease too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in cost too. So getting, you know, I have folks that, you know, sometimes they're coming to us because they have made a move. And, you know, it's maybe we moved, dad was having a lot of falls. So we moved him into a retirement community, a 55 and up, you know, independent living.
Mm-hmm.
There's no access to care in that type of a setting unless you're bringing in an outside source, which gets really costly.
Yeah, really expensive.
You know, or mm-hmm. memory was starting to decline, but, you know, so we moved them into assisted living and we thought that would be great. But now they're wandering and there's no memory care.
And multiple moves are so hard for people.
So hard. They're hard. Mm-hmm. They're expensive. You know, moving someone, it can cause continued decline too. It can cause a bit. You can take someone who's experiencing brain change and they've mapped out their setting. They can get to the dining room. They can get to their apartment. They can get to their their chair chi class.
Right.
And then you take them out of that environment and sometimes we can't map it again.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. that piece. And then also when we're looking at finances, sometimes we're talking about we only have private pay funds for a certain amount of time. And we're in a setting that will not allow us to go roll over to Medicaid when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of all of those pieces.
Yeah, there's a lot of the holistic approach. Talk a little bit about, for the people that are listening that might not understand, no matter anyone's pay status, we can always find a safe place for them.
Always.
Talk a little bit about what Medicaid rollover looks like when you use that terminology.
When we're talking about a Medicaid rollover, you know, it's essentially if someone says, just for the sake of this conversation, mm-hmm. I have a 2-year spend down. That means that there's a required 2 years of private pay before someone could even think about rolling over to Medicaid. And Medicaid is quite a process, too.
Yeah.
So there's a 5-year look back. Mm-hmm. I have people say, well, what if we just kind of push this money over here? Don't do it.
Right. It's the government knows and they'll find your land. They'll find everything.
Yeah.
And as Ashley stated, there's a 5-year look back period that you are supposed to pay privately before you can protect your assets to go on Medicaid, which is the state funding. And in 14 years, we've never had anyone have to move out because they could not go on Medicaid. So I want to really applaud you and all the advisors that find these homes that do a Medicaid conversion with people that maybe only have 10 months of private pay at $9,000. But that nest egg is going to keep them for the rest of their life at that location. And we write into the contract that they never have to leave for financial reasons, which I'm just so proud about because the providers are taking a little bit of a risk not knowing what DSHS and Medicaid is going to pay when that 10 months comes.
Right.
But that we are setting ourselves up with successful providers that will not kick somebody out when they run out of money, which is really important to me.
Very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. How great to know that, you know, you have this happening to you and you only have this amount, but you can go somewhere where you're going to be taken care of for the rest of your life. And it's not, you know, we are working directly with the clients and the families and their loved ones and those who we're representing and advocating for. But that does not, you know, we also build really great relationships with providers out there
to ask for favors.
Yeah, to room for negotiation.
Yes.
And so it's just, it's really important, because that's also how we, you know, we're making sure we're not just getting you in a place that will just accept you.
Right.
You know, we're helping you move into a place that's truly going to take care of you.
Yeah. And it's a good, maybe you're moving in with only six other people, and we find out the mix of those other five or six people to make sure it's a good match as well.
Yeah, people worry about that. But, yeah. We, you know, I ask, you know, what do you love to do? What have you always loved to do? Are you social?
Yeah.
You know, is having people that you can chat with really important to you? We're going to make sure that the resident population is something that you would really mesh well with, because that's what's important to have, you know, a day where you thrive.
Absolutely. And all this modern technology and AI, I will be proud to say that our search process will never change and never go to AI, because these are people. And our four directors of family services that call and ask, what are the five other people doing? Does anyone like bingo? Mm-hmm. I have an engineer from Boeing. Anyone to talk to?
Yeah.
And always making sure that it's that personable touch to make sure, because we're not just looking for a great care in an open bed. Maybe we have a 55-year-old that is thriving but has MS and needs some physical care. We're not going to put them in a home with 85 to 90-year-olds that are at the end of their journey. So we're just really always looking for that holistic approach.
Yeah, it's important. It's important to use someone who can advocate for you in that way. You don't just go buy a car and point and say, I'll just take that one.
Exactly.
Because it drives.
Drive test it. So, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I know you would say don't wait until there's a crisis. What other advice would you give family members starting this journey?
Start the conversation
with
your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough
talk about
one.
It.
You know, you need to talk about it. Start to get people, you know, comfortable with the idea and what it looks like. Because nobody likes to, you know, you want to play a part in decision making for yourself if you're able to. And so, you know, we don't know what the future is going to look like for our loved ones. And say they do experience dementia and brain change, and they can't advocate for themselves anymore. So now you're doing it for them. Having a conversation to know what was important to them and what they were okay with, should the time come where you do have to make tough decisions, can give you a lot of relief in the moments that you have to actually execute.
Well, what good advice for you to share with adult children? That's a huge, journey that if you share that, their outcome on that journey is going to be great.
Yeah.
So having adult children hear that and look at today, tomorrow, and forever is so important.
Yeah, very important.
So Ashley, I want to share a couple personal items. One, you got newly engaged. We're so excited for you. The whole team is just on fire and
excited. Finally happened.
Yeah, and you have a venue and
you
can see that glow.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. And also I got to give a plug to Ashley's grandmother, who I've known for, I don't even know, I don't want to say how long, but maybe 42 years.
Yeah, she is just...
And Linda Alvar, who is instrumental in the Law Enforcement Officer and Firefighter Pension Board that we are so aligned closely with to help all of those firefighters and police officers retire. But she and I have worked with them for, I think, 17 years. So, yeah, so grateful for you and your family and our connection.
Yeah, she, that Grammy is a spitfire.
Yeah.
But we're happy to have her, and I'm glad she made this connection, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Ashley, thank you again. And this is episode number 17 of Senior Spotlight. You can reach us at www.concierge care advisors. You can call us anytime at 855-444-7364. Thank you again. I'm Mary Cordova with Concierge Care Advisors.